Welcome to the Mind Stogie Mr. Goji podcast with your hosts, Don Gonzalez
and Mark Connolly,
where we get together and discuss everything from the sublime
to the ridiculous.
Welcome back to the Mind Stogie Mr. Goji podcast. Our first segment is what you drinking and what you smoking.
All right.
Mark, we'll start with you.
Well, we had a sip of the Macallan 12.
Yes.
And then I am currently drinking Maker's Mark.
Okay.
They're very different.
So Maker's Mark is a bourbon.
Yes. The Macallan 12, I liked it. I'm kind of thinking that I might have liked that one Glenmorangie that we had more.
Well, let's give it a shot. We're going to come back and revisit that. We were originally going to review that, but time constraints tonight didn't allow me in particular to prepare properly for the cigar I wanted to smoke and making sure I had the proper amount of food in my stomach so I didn't get sick or whatever. So, but we'll come back and talk about that. So your Maker's Mark.
Yeah, so it's a bourbon, and I'm pairing it with an Arturo Fuente Hemingway Classic, which I've had before.
Is that the natural or the Maduro?
This is a natural, and it's got a Cameroon wrapper, and everything else is Dominican inside of it. This, you know, I have kind of a price point comfort zone, and this is like right on the edge of it. So usually if I'm buying Arturo Fuente, I'll get 8 5/8 or something like that, because they're $7 or $8.
Yeah.
And this one's like 10 or 11. And so it's just right there on the edge of, you know, do I want to just roll up a $10 bill and set it on fire? but I like this cigar. I like it better than the 8 5/8. But like all of the Arturo Fuentes that I've generally have had, they're well constructed. They're well made. They're a pretty cigar. They smoke well. I'm enjoying this one.
And so, you should, because of that's, I think that's their, as close to a Churchill.
Yeah, it's a 48 ring gauge and 7 inches long.
So that means the wrapper is going to have a greater influence on mm-hmm. that cigar. So you should have more sweetness.
Yeah.
With that cigar.
I do. And it's pairing with the sweetness that you find in the bourbon.
And do you know whose preferred bourbon that is?
No, I don't. Hint,
it's a fictional character.
No.
Let's see if this is. I think this is his full. Leroy Jethro Gibbs.
Oh, really?
Yeah. if you ever watch the show, he's in his workshop downstairs, and he'll have a little mason jar with nuts and bolts, and he'll empty it out, and he'll reach over and get a Maker's Mark bottle and pour himself. He always has two jars down there, so if there's somebody that comes down, he can share a drink with him. So there's a little trivia.
There's one episode where he's working on his boat in the basement. You know, that's kind of a running deal with the basement. So how does he get the boat out? You know, that's never, ever explained. He's falling asleep down there, and he's got a mug of coffee, and he wakes up, and he goes to reach for his coffee, and it's cold, and he sets it down, and he's got some kind of a wood-burning something that's set on a stand next to him. He just sticks it in the coffee and heats the coffee up.
It's like a scene in the movie. One of my annual traditions is I have to watch at Christmas Eve. I've got to watch It's a Wonderful Life. Christmas Day, I watch A Christmas Carol, the TNT movie with Patrick Stewart as a Scrooge.
Mm.
And there's a scene in there when they're having a party, his nephew, and they have a Christmas punch, and they take the poker and stick it into the fireplace. Then they stick it into the punch to heat it up.
Really?
Yeah, so you reminded me of that with that story.
Oh, wow.
Kevin, are you prepared to talk about what you're smoking?
I can tell you what I'm smoking. I can't tell you much about it. I bought a six-pack of Gurkhas today. So apparently, they're all Nicaraguan. I'm not talking. I have stuff in my throat. But anyways, this particular one is called Evil.
Oh, great.
They've got a line. So this one's Evil. There's a ghost. There's an exorcist. The ghost and the exorcist, they're two of my favorite Griffith cigars. But this has other ones in it. This one's got Rogue, which is one of my, probably my third favorite Gurkha. And it's got more, it's got one of their signature series and some other things in it. So I will say that this one had trouble staying lit. I think that's more of a consequence of the humidity than the actual actual build quality. And then it tried to canoe on me just now. But otherwise, it's smooth. The only thing I'm picking up right now is a roasted nut flavor, but I think my palate's still a little jacked up from being congested this past week.
Yeah, you're feeling a little Flemish.
Just a little, just a little bit. And I'm pairing it with a large, fancy cup of diabetes juice.
Oh, excellent.
Also known as Coca-Cola Classic.
I used to smoke Gurkhas a lot. But then, much like I moved away from Ripple to bourbon, I moved on. I'm kidding.
Gurkhas are actually a pretty decent cigar.
I know. Just poking fun.
Remember, were they at the Big Smoke?
We got a Gurkha from them.
Okay, they were there then.
Yeah. So somebody was there handing them out. Some
stranger.
Yes. Here, try these Gurkhas.
I just don't remember seeing it in the bag. I guess I just wasn't paying attention.
I think it's a ghost, actually.
Okay. Well, if it's in there, Kevin, I'll give it to you. All right, so I'm drinking the Glenmorangie 10 that we reviewed last week, so I'm not going to bother to do that again. And I am smoking a Tampa Sweetheart number 24, which comes from the Tampa Sweetheart Cigar Company that's owned by Arturo Fuente Jr. and his daughter, Christine. Apparently, they're third generation. I still don't know if this Arturo Fuente Jr. is the Artie that I've talked to on the phone before. I must now know. But apparently, they're third generation. This is truly the only Fuente retail store in the United States. That much I do know. These cigars are unique because they are apprentice rolled, and this what that means is that these are rollers that are learning how to roll cigars before they let them roll the real Fuentes. So in theory, they're using, they don't tell you which tobacco's in it, but it's all Dominican. It's a Dominican wrapper and filler. So presumably it's some of the same tobacco that Fuente uses for their premium cigars. The difference on this, I didn't know this when I bought it. I learned it today as I was getting ready for the show, is that out of all of the Tampa Sweethearts, this is the only one that has short filler. So what short filler means is it's when it's chopped up tobacco as opposed to the wrapped leaves that are in a binder. So, but despite the fact that it's short filler, it's burning consistently and very well rolled. So the last thing I want to say, it's 5.5 inches long and it's a 42 ring gauge. And I'm not picking up anything, maybe a little bit of kind of a butterscotch or a honey flavor. It's a very smooth cigar. If I didn't know it was a Dominican, I would think that there was some Connecticut. And it's possible that the wrapper is a Connecticut broadleaf, but I didn't see anything on their website to say what it was. And it just went out on me.
Uh-oh. That can happen with those short fill. I guess the apprentices know they're doing a good job when they get to actually use whole leaves instead of the stuff they sweep up off the floor.
Yeah, but is short filler always what they sweep off the floor?
I don't know. I made that up.
Well, a lot of people like to say that, but
it's a derogatory way of referring to it. But you know, when they are trimming the leaves to roll them, you do get bits of leaf left behind. And that's what I imagine.
Yeah, and I imagine they gather that up. You know?
Why let it go to waste? I mean, it's still good tobacco.
Well, there's some other small cigars that Fuente makes that are short fillers. They've got the Cubanitos, and the other one I can't pronounce. It's something like I don't remember. It's a special something or Conquistador or something like that. And they're the, you know, those, I used to call them breakfast cigars.
Yeah.
A little short, little cigar. It's a little bit bigger than a cigarette, but not quite a small cigar.
You know what their curly heads are made from?
No.
Because that's a, you won't find them everywhere, but I have seen them at the cigar warehouse. They're finished with a pigtail.
Right.
And they're pretty cheap. They're like $3 or $4. But they look like...
I think those are long fill, though.
Really?
Could be wrong. All right, so that's what we're drinking, and that's what we're smoking. Tonight, what we decided we were going to talk about... Well, we hinted at this at the end of last episode, and we decided to follow through on it, and that is, this is the beginning of the new year. We know Mark doesn't like to make New Year's resolutions. He stated that emphatically last week. But we are of the opinion that it's a good time for us to step back and recollect and reflect on how our prayer lives are going. And we thought it might be a good time to talk about developing a prayer life or taking the prayer life to the next level and talk a little bit about the notion of having what some people call a plan of life. I think the more traditional term that most people know is rule of life. There are variations on this, and we're going to talk about the variations. I want to frame this before we get started and ask Mark to talk a little bit about his view on this and then his practices as a lay Dominican. Is in my time working in Joe Catholic, I remember hearing guys say they didn't have a prayer life.
Right.
And I would venture to guess that most people don't have an organized prayer life, intentional prayer life.
Right.
I'm not saying they don't pray. I'm just saying that they're not intentional about it. But then I was shocked at some of the people, at least in the group that we were with, who I thought of as strong Catholic men, who insisted they didn't need to have a prayer life. And I remember one guy in particular said that was his wife's job. And I'm like, and so I'd like to refute that statement by saying this is like a prayer is about having a relationship with Jesus Christ. And without prayer, you can't have that relationship. And I'm motivated by a quote that I remember from St. Teresa of Avila. She said, mental prayer is nothing else than intimate sharing between friends. We know this to be true, whether us as guys, when we were courting our wives, we wanted to talk to them as much as possible. And even now, in order to sustain our relationships, there has to be communication. Can't just, you know, coexist.
Right.
But the same thing is true in regular friendships.
Yeah.
You know, like you and I regularly converse. Sometimes it's on the phone. Sometimes it's sending a text or a ridiculous Facebook messenger message.
With some ridiculous gif.
But there's some intentionality there about continuing the lines of communication, making sure each of us are okay, and just growing the friendship and the way we grew our relationship with our wives as well. And the last two things I want to say before we get into kind of the nuts and bolts of developing a prayer life is that, you know, when back in my days of being in financial services, I used to tell people when I was talking to them about their retirement that people don't plan to fail. They just fail to plan. I think the same is true with our spiritual lives. You don't plan to fail in your spiritual life. You just fail to plan to have an intentional spiritual life. You're just going through the motions, and I think we're called to do more than that. And the last thing I want to say is, as we get started in all of this, and I'm going to call this the Kevin Doctrine, is my number one big piece of advice is start simple.
Yeah.
You're going to hear us talk about some of the things that we currently do. I'm going to give two acronyms for some simpler ways to get started that I've heard over the years. It's just kind of frameworks for you to get started. But what I would say to you is, if you're, as you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, now I can finally put together some sort of organized prayer life, don't try to do it all at the same time. It is better for you to have one or two practices that you develop and start doing regularly over the course of, let's say, 2 to 3 months before you start adding to it. Otherwise, you're going to quit. I call this the Kevin Doctrine, because every time this year Kevin decides he's going to start working out, he goes at it like a madman, you know, lifting weights every day, hitting the bike every day, and then he pulls a muscle or hurts himself and slides back. So don't do that.
Yeah, that's good advice.
So do you want me to go over the simple ones, or do you want to start yours? Talk a little bit about...
Let's talk about the simple ones first, because I think it's really important. And I remember in one of the earlier Joe Catholic meetings, we did that. We went through just, you know, how do you begin? And I guess at some level, a goal here is to kind of demystify prayer so that it can be mystical eventually.
I think I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
So you made me think of something. I think what everybody needs to understand is that at its core, prayer is a conversation. Jesus.
Right.
And I give Kevin a hard time here, but one thing that I'm very proud of him about is at a very young age, he was very comfortable speaking to God like he was just talking to him, like another person in the room. And I really think that's the goal. Is, yes, there's a place for traditional prayers. Yes, there's a place for formula prayers. But I think when we're really talking about developing a personal prayer life, it's about having, like St. Teresa said, a conversation with God.
Right.
And he wants to know, he already knows everything that's going on in your life, but he wants to hear you share that with him. And so just talking to him, I'm reminded of a quote from St. Jose Maria Escriva, who said, "You don't know how to pray? Ask God to teach you how to pray,
yeah,
and surely you've already started."
Yeah.
And so that's the starting point, is just have a willingness in your heart to have a conversation with God and just talk to him in silence. So I'm going to give a couple of pieces of advice before I go into these simple ones, and that is that you really need just to think about your prayer time as an appointment with God. And if you're the sort of person that needs to put it in your calendar, then do so. But if you don't set a certain time every day to pray, it's not going to become a practice, and it's not going to be something that you prioritize. And I'll tell you, there's some, you know, we all have things that happen in life that make it difficult. And I'll talk a little bit about this on the back end about how I deal with that. But over the years, I've heard Franciscans talk about this. I've heard people from Opus Dei. I've heard other religious people talk about the different forms of prayer life. But the two things they all have in common is have a particular place and have a particular time. Now, for me, I always do it first thing in the morning. And I have, you know, a private area where I know I'm not going to be disturbed. And I, you know, while I use my phone for the meditations and stuff, I'm not messing with anything other than the apps that I use for my prayer. I'm not getting on email. I'm not getting on social media or anything like that. And being intentional about that. And if you're tempted to do that, then you might want to put your phone on airplane mode or something like that. I mean, I do that at Mass. I put my phone on airplane mode. All right. So the first one is one that I've learned most recently from our pastor at St. Anne's, Father Edwin. And he called it the ADEPT model, ADEPT. And the A is pick a particular area, same place every day, just like I said a little while ago. So ADEPT, the A stands for area. So pick a place, maybe it's your office, maybe it's out in your workshop in the garage, maybe it's your man cave. D stands for duration. Now, Father Edwin recommended 30 minutes of duration. I'm going to modify that and say try to start off with 15 minutes. And I'll come back to this, explain to you how you can do 15 minutes. E is exclusive. It's just prayer. And what Father Edwin meant by that is, again, you're not letting yourself be interrupted by other activities. You're dedicating that time exclusively for prayer. P, plan. That's what we're going to talk about here in a little bit. Have a plan. Have some general shape to what your prayer time is going to be. Like, how's it going to start? What's going to be in the beginning? What's going to be in the middle? What's going to be the end? And then the T is a time of day, that you have a particular time of day every day. So for me, it's about 6 a.m. every morning. So that's kind of the framework for it. Within that context, the other simple one that I've heard before is actually, if you just, without any other materials at all, like no reflection guides, no gospel reading or anything like that, you could organize your time into four components. And it's used with the acronym ACTS, A-C-T-S. You start off with adoration, praising God for who he is. C, then you take a moment to be contrite about those times where you may have fallen short in pursuing holiness in your life. And then T, thanksgiving for the blessings and the graces that you've received. And then S, supplication, means asking for stuff. And I would argue, I think the no-brainer is you start off with adoration. But I think the other three don't necessarily need to be in that particular order. So I think that you can use both of those frameworks to get started. And then what I would say is that from the reading that I've done, because I've given a talk on this pretty much every year when we were doing Joe Catholic every year, I started off the first meeting of January with talking about developing a spiritual game plan, is what I called it. And I think as a minimum, you have a couple of things in it. And again, I think you start off simple with this. Bookends in the morning. So in the morning, you start off with a morning offering. And in the show notes, I'll create a link to a place where you can find a bunch of this formula morning offerings. You do this after a while, and you can just make up your own morning offering. Do that in the morning, and then at the end of the day, you do an examination of conscience, and those are your bookends. And then I would say in the morning, you know, a lot of, you know, spiritual directors talk about having at least 15 minutes of spiritual reading. I would say start off by just doing the daily readings. I started off doing that 20 years ago, and that's still the core of my prayer time in the morning, is taking the daily readings and using those as a launching pad for prayer. And then if you want to sprinkle in a rosary, and then I would say is like be intentional about praying over your meals, each of your meals throughout the day. And I think that's a good start. And then you can add to it. Maybe you add 10 minutes of spiritual reading from a particular book. Maybe if you want to have a traditional prayer, you add the Angelus in the middle of the day to remind you. Maybe you set a timer on your watch for the 3 o'clock hour, the Divine Mercy hour, and you pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet. There are apps for that, but you build yourself up to that. But I think in the very beginning, you make sure you have a place and a time, you make sure you have a morning offering, and you spend some time with the gospel. Even if you don't read the other readings, at least read the gospel, because then you're reflecting on the life of Christ. And reflecting on his life, I think, just naturally draws you closer to him. So that's kind of the framework that we've talked about in the past.
I think one of the things I recall from the Joe Catholic meeting, one of the first Joe Catholic meetings that I was in, that where you presented this plan of life, was a morning offering can be really simple. You sit up in bed and you go, God, I dedicate this day to you. And that's a prayer and that's a start. And I think then you try to build from that. I think the idea of having a plan matters. And I happened to read this morning on a blog that I follow that's on Stoic philosophy. And I think the guy said Seneca was opposed to New Year's resolutions, which I didn't know that was a thing back then. Maybe that's been historically a traditional time. But the point he was making was that we do a lot of things. We pick a date to set up something, and it's just a way to procrastinate. So, like, I'll start my diet on Monday. I'll start exercising, you know, in January after the first of the year. This will be my New Year's resolution. So he was warning against the idea of using the New Year's resolution as a reason to not start something that you know you should start already.
Right.
But the guy went on to say there is a value to assessing where you are and, you know, checking that. And annually seems like a good, at least a good minimum, you know. And so that idea of beginning the year with kind of reassessing your rule of life, if you will, is a good one. Because if we've fallen away, then you can kind of renew it. But I would just add the caveat of don't wait till the first of the year. You know, here we are. What is today, the second or the third? Second.
Second.
Yeah, so if you're going to wait for your New Year's resolution now, you've got almost a full 12 months of procrastinating ahead of you. So don't do that. So with regard to that, you want me to talk about, I mean, I live with a rule. I live under a rule.
Yeah, you've talked about it a little bit.
Yeah.
I think when we talked about schools of spirituality, but if you maybe talk a little bit about more in detail, and maybe talk a little bit about how you're, prayer life has evolved over the years, you know, like, you know, I think there's an ebb and flow. I think it's natural for all of us that we go through periods of time where it feels like we're really in touch with our Lord and that we're hitting it.
Yeah.
And then there are times where it's like either the time that we're praying is dry, or you seem to have so many distractions, or you know, things pop up from work that you're struggling to fit the time in that you've allocated.
Right.
So maybe talk a little bit about how you've approached that over the years.
Yeah, I guess the first thing I would like to say is that I have heard people talk as if there's some sort of hierarchy in prayer. And so like the rote prayers, like the Our Father or the Hail Mary or whatever, somehow aren't as legit or as valuable or whatever as, you know, prayer that comes from the heart, quote unquote. And I just want to kind of call BS on that. There's a reason why these prayers have existed for hundreds of years. But one of the values of memorizing some prayer is if you don't know what to do, you can at least do that. And if you want to make it not just a rote prayer, then pay attention to what you're saying. I was doing RCIA for children and youth, and asked the kids, who knows the Our Father? And they all raised their hand. I said, okay, let me hear it. And they go, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Amen. And I was like, okay, let's say it slow. Because, you know, they weren't paying any attention to any of that. It was just noise coming out. And I remember it was while I was doing that with them that it really hit me, the forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a scary thing to say. You're asking God to treat you like you treat other people. And boy, there's a prayer in there. So, you know, when you stop and think about these prayers that have been around forever for reason, it's not a bad thing to resort to rote prayer.
Well, you mentioned the Lord's Prayer. It's considered the perfect prayer.
Right.
But to your point about the forgiveness, if you go read the Matthew version of the Lord's Prayer, immediately after it, he really reiterates the point about forgiving your neighbor.
Yep.
And so I remember I too had a moment, and it was at Mass. And I was like, oh, what am I praying here?
Yeah.
And it was like, I need to make a serious shift in the way that I forgive people. Like, but I tell you what, that realization made it easy to let a lot of stuff go.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yeah. And there's a freedom in that too, when you let it go. Did we say this once before, but somebody said that holding a grudge against somebody is like drinking poison and hoping it affects them.
Yes.
But as a lay Dominican, I actually live under a rule. When you become a member, you get the rule and directory. And it's interesting because the rule is like 8 pages and the directory is like 30. So the 8 pages are the basic rule. And then the directory is whatever's adapted for whatever area you live in. But the rule's pretty simple, but it is helpful because it is a plan. Pray the liturgy of the hours, the morning prayer and the evening prayer. That's what you promise to do. Pray a rosary daily. Pray what they call the suffrages, which are prayers for the Dominican dead. And it's an Our Father and a Hail Mary, and then the Eternal Rest Grant Unto Them, O Lord, prayer daily. And then there are Dominican, they're not feasts, but they're Dominican, I don't know the right word, memorials maybe, where there are days that we pray for the Dominicans, specifically for the Dominicans who have died. We pray for the parents of Dominicans. I remember reading somewhere they're saying, you know, if you want to have good food, then you join the Benedictines or something like that. If you want this or that, you join the Franciscans. But if you want people praying for you when you're dead, join the Dominicans, because we do spend a lot of time thinking about those who have gone before us, remembering those who have passed. Included in that is the four pillars that I've mentioned before: study, prayer, community, and preaching or evangelization or apostolate. That last one gets called a lot of different things. But what that means is I am supposed to study, and that is not just tied to studying the Bible or studying lives of saints. It's study that will be useful and you can use in the world. And so one of the images of a good Dominican is they've got the Bible in one hand and a newspaper in the other. And that's so that you're aware of what's going on in the world, and then you can apply what you studied or learned in the Bible to the daily, you know, whatever's current events are out there. And it helps you to see the current events, review them within the context of God and the Bible, and your relationship with God, and then what your responsibility is for the people that are out there. And so that study can also be other things. And I like to quote Paul when he said, test everything, hold fast to what is true. And I had mentioned the Stoics earlier. You know, Stoic philosophy has a lot of touch points that are compatible with Christianity, Catholicism. And so it's good to study philosophy. As one of our professors said, it's the preamble to faith, or preamble to theology, which literally means it walks before theology. And so if you're studying anything, you could be studying mathematics, but if it's within the context of, you know, this is about God's creation, this, I'm going to be able to learn something in here that may be useful in a conversation with somebody later. Because we're supposed to, the Dominicans, one of the charisms is you're supposed to study and then contemplate what you've studied and then bring the fruits of contemplation to others in the form of preaching or what have you. So I want to spend just a moment kind of talking up the Liturgy of the Hours, because it's extraordinarily useful in terms of a plan. Because if you have that morning prayer and the evening prayer, you've bookended your day. Prayer involves basically working through almost all the Psalms in a year. There are seasons, like right now we're in the Christmas season, so the Psalms that are selected are appropriate for Advent and Christmas. And then there are readings. So if all you do is the Liturgy of the Hours, you're going to be praying the Psalms. You're going to be doing at least two daily readings. They're short, but they're there. There's going to be some sort of prayer for the intentions of others. When, if you add night prayer to all this, there's a deliberate examination of conscience at the end of the day. And so living under that rule in a way kind of makes it easy for me to have a plan of life, because it's right there. So morning prayer, rosary, evening prayer, prayer for the Dominican dead. And then with the rosary, I have kind of a list of, you know, people that you'll be asked, you know, will you pray for me? Or you hear about something and you go, yeah, I'll add you to my rosary. So the daily rosary is a really good habit to get into, and it's a way to meditate on the life of Christ with a lot of reference to Mary as the mother of God and the person who cooperated with God entering his own creation in the incarnation. And if you spend some time thinking about that, I think it was G.K. Chesterton that said something like, stark staring incredulity is the kind of the only appropriate response to that idea that God became man. I mean, I don't know that we truly appreciate that. And it's really appropriate at this Christmas season to really think through that God became one of his own creation. He entered his creation as a creation. That's insane. I mean, if you just think about it, it's like, wow. And, you know, I think it does us some good every year to spend some time really thinking about that fact. So that's the Liturgy of the Hours is a very useful tool. It's a very useful prayer pattern to have. Morning and evening, you bookend your day. It goes through a process. It goes through seasons. You get a lot of the Bible read during that time. And of course, like I said, all the Psalms. Couple that with the rosary and the intentions for others. And then study and contemplation. And then bringing those fruits to the contemplation. The way I particularly do that mostly is either writing or giving some kind of a presentation or a talk. So, and it really keeps you grounded. The seasonal aspect of the Liturgy of the Hours is very, very helpful to me, because it mimics the seasons, the rhythm, the cycle of you know, the annual seasons, the cycle of life and death. It kind of keeps you in the middle of all that and looking at God and going, wow, here I am, God, and what would you have me do? So my rule of life is kind of set because of the Dominican.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the whole Liturgy of the Hours, because while you're part of a religious affiliated with the religious order. Traditionally, people have associated Liturgy of the Hours either with the ordained or religious orders.
Right.
And it's perfectly okay for lay people to use that as a practice as a part of their daily prayer life. Yes. I had breakfast with another friend of mine, and that's one of his practices. And there are a number of apps now, like the iBreviary makes it fairly easy.
Yes.
And there are variations. You know, there's the multiple books that can be a little daunting. And then there's the, what is it? It's called a shorter prayer.
Yeah, or common prayer.
No, I think it's called a shorter prayer. It's the really small one.
Yeah, I think you're right.
So there are variations, and I'll try to include as many of those variations in the show notes as well. So I'll talk about my plan of life. It's a little, I would say, I don't want to say it's simpler. I would say that it is what it is. I don't want to add any judgments to it. So this isn't necessarily dictated by my being a cooperator of Opus Dei. I mean, there are some things I'm expected to do. They don't really call it a rule of life. They call it a plan of life. And like your spiritual director will be very adamant with you about starting small and growing into it. And I would say even after all this time that I've been a cooperator, I'm still growing it. Mm. You know, there's some things that other guys do that I don't do because I just find it difficult to incorporate it in my daily work life. And I just have got to a point in my life I'm not going to try to incorporate something that I know I'm not going to be able to do.
Right.
So I'm going to keep the things that I can do. So my morning starts with a morning offering. This can vary. Sometimes it's a formula prayer that I use with an app that's actually called Plan of Life. And then sometimes it's just a prayer that I've come up with myself. And then I have a prayer from San Jose Maria that I use as my kind of pre-prayer to get me in the right mindset to start my daily prayers. I start off by reading the daily readings. And then I read a reflection. Sometimes I also listen to a reflection. And then I will take notes on those reflections and I'll meditate on those notes. And that's my morning. On my drive to work in the mornings, I'm fortunate enough to pass directly by a Catholic church. So I do an act of spiritual communion. And then I'm very intentional about praying grace at all of my meals out loud, invisibly doing the sign of the cross, because there have been fruits that have been born out of that in the past. I don't have time for me to talk about that right now, but just know that sometimes you can touch people's hearts just by praying over your meals. On my drive home, I'll pray the rosary. And then when I get home in the evening, as I'm winding down before I go to bed, I do an examination of conscience. The thing about the examination and the reading and everything, I journal everything. One of the other things that I do, this is not required of me, it's something that I do, is whatever mass I go to, not just Sunday masses, but holy days of obligation, or if I have an opportunity to go to mass in the middle of the week, I will take notes on the homily. And then what I do Saturday morning is I go back and I read through each of my entries in my journals. And I have two different ones. I use what's called a Hobodichi Techo, or Techo, for my daily entries. That's a Japanese like daily planner thing that I use. It's small and short, and it allows me to write in that daily. And then I use a modified bullet journal for my entries for mass, and I actually index those. So I'll pull whatever the main theme of the homily, and I'll index that so I can go back and very quickly refer to them. And then also in that bullet journal, I do a synthesis on Saturday where I write down the main theme for each of the days, and I look for a big nugget or an action item that I feel like the Lord is calling me to do. And that's how I kind of end my week as I go into Sunday. On a weekly basis, adoration. On a monthly basis, reconciliation. And related to the plan of life, on a monthly basis, this is hit or miss for me right now because the season that we're in right now, spiritual direction, where I meet with a priest and talk about kind of challenges I'm having in my prayer life or my spiritual life. And then I'm required to attend a retreat once a year. And so that's my plan of life. But from a daily standpoint, I really think that what I do really isn't a lot. Some people think it is. I spend about 20 to 30 minutes in the morning. And I will say that some days are more challenging than others. If I have an early meeting at work that I've got to get to, I struggle with this. And one of the things that I've done, I think is perfectly okay, is I leverage technology. I know that I get a daily email from Amen, which is part of the St. Augustine Institute, where they have the readings in audio format. As I'm picking up my breakfast in the morning, that's part of my morning routine, I will listen to those readings. I'll also listen to a 10-minute meditation on those, so that when I get back to the house, I know that I have 15 minutes dedicated to just meditating on those and journaling on them. So if I'm pressed for time, that's how I still squeeze in the reading. You know, I'm not reading them, I'm listening to them, but I'm a believer that you can still read by using audiobooks and things of that sort. So that's how I kind of shortcut that when I need to. It's not a regular practice, but as I need to, I will do that. And I have, I would say 90% of the time, I hit it with, you know, that's a non-negotiable, that I'm going to have that morning prayer at 5:30 to 6 every morning, no matter what. And like I said, I have a set place and I have a set time. And then the thing that I used to struggle with that I've incorporated in like the last 4 months is I didn't used to have a nighttime prayer. I know I do much better with every aspect of my life if I close that out at night. Part of my examination of conscience is I force myself to find 3 things that I'm either grateful for, or where I saw God acting in my life, or where I saw myself being used as an instrument for God, or that I had a God moment. And then also reflect on the things where I failed. So I'll do 3 arrows up and then however many arrows down. And that's also something that I can go back and reflect upon. Is there a fault or some sort of trait that I need to be working on that I can take to my spiritual director and say, look, I'm struggling with this particular thing, whether it's patience or temperance or fortitude or whatever the issue might be. So, you know, if you listen to me long enough, you're going to know that I'm a big journaler guy. I got like 4 different journals that I use for different things. And Kevin doesn't know this, but he'll know this now. You know, when the day comes that I die, he's going to get the collection of all my journals. I've got about 8 years of them right now. So I'll get to read all my inner thoughts.
So I have a comment and then a question for you. Comment is just, there is an Ignatian spirituality. The Jesuits, a practice called the examine, which can be an examination of conscience. I guess it really is, but there is a definite structure to it, and you can just look up Ignatian spirituality examine and find several different variants, but it's a really good practice, and they recommend doing it at the end of the day, but they also suggest doing it at lunchtime and at the end of the day. You know, the idea there is, you know, you start off your day and then you do a sort of a check-in with yourself in the middle of the day, and then you check in at night. If nobody's tried that before, I would suggest you just Google Jesuit examine, and you'll find it's short. It's designed to be a 10 or 15 minute practice, and it can get longer, but it doesn't have to.
Okay, it can be as short as 5 minutes.
Yes. So, but it's a really good practice because of that self-reflection, you know, and I guess it was Socrates that said the unexamined life is not worth living. And you see this pattern of looking at your day and looking at yourself and looking where you've succeeded and failed. is common across multiple cultures and many different philosophies. So if you've not heard of that or tried it, I would highly recommend it. The second thing then is I have a question, and you mentioned a little bit about it. I have tried to journal at different times, and I'm interested in the logistics of what you do. And you mentioned you had four different ones, and I mean, do you carry them all around with you? Are they in your backpack all the time, or some at home? I mean,
So only two of them are spiritual. The other two are work related or personal related. So one of them is a little pocket one that I carry around with me just for thoughts and stuff like that. And then I have one for work that's just like my daily bullet journal for activities and stuff. The two ones that I use for prayer, the hoping at where I pray, I have a desk drawer. And I keep the Hobonichi Techo there, and I have a portable desk that I set up when I pray. So I pull out the journal that I use for daily prayer in the morning, and I use that then. And then at the end of that session, I store it away. And then in the evenings, I pull it back out, and that's when I do my examination at the bottom of that page. And it's set out to have, you know, like today it's got the second. And I'll start off at the top, like, you know, what is the second Tuesday of Christmas time? And whatever the gospel reading I'll put on the top. And then whatever that was, like today was the testimony of John the Baptist. So it gives me a reference point when I look at it immediately, like what was the gospel about? And then whatever I wrote about it, I can see it very quickly. Then I have another notebook that's a little bigger that I also keep in the drawer, and I pull that out for Sunday Mass and whatnot. I don't carry it with me every day. But then on Saturdays, I take both of them and pair them together, and I'm going through the daily one, and I literally write a line for each day, like what's the main theme, and I'll look. So actually right on the top, like this would be second week of Christmas synthesis. So it would be December 26th, December 27th, or whatever, you know.
Right.
I guess this was last week. I write those down, whatever the theme is, for one or two lines for each theme. Pray over those, and then at the very bottom, I'll write out one or two things, like what is the main theme? What is the action that God's calling me to do? And I pray over it. Pray with it, and then write that down, and then that's the way that kind of goes.
So how much time per day do you think you spend journaling?
So I don't know, 15 or 20 minutes in the morning and another 10 minutes at night each day.
Okay.
And then on Saturdays, that's probably about 30 to 45 minute activity.
Okay. And then one last comment, and that is for anybody that's looking at, okay, how am I going to set this up? The first thing is we will make time for the things that we want to make time for. And one of the easiest ways to do that is first thing in the morning. And for me, what that means is I have to be intentional about what time I go to bed, because I want to get all my sleep in, but I want to wake up at a certain specific time. And I try to wake up at the same time every day, even if it's the weekend. That's a common trait that you'll read. I mean, I think Benjamin Franklin did that. Marcus Aurelius did that. I mean, all these people kind of just woke up at the same time every day because they set a routine, kind of like the sun. So the idea is the morning planning begins at night. So you sit there and you decide you're going to bed, and then you get up at a specific time. Saint Jose Maria Escriva refers to that heroic minute in the morning. And first time I heard that term, I was like, wow, that's real. Because that alarm goes off and you just kind of want to lay there. So that heroic minute is when you sit up and you go, okay, I'm starting the day. The other thing I'll say is one of the things about place is, you know, we're ritual kind of people. So one of the things I generally do when I get up in the morning to say my morning prayer is I will light a candle. I do my praying here in the theological armory, which is my smoking room and it's where all my books are. The idea is you get up in the morning and come down into a specific place, and you know that's a prayer place. You sit in your prayer chair, or you know, my daughter has a kneeler that she has in her bedroom. She kneels at her kneeler I light a candle and then I start my morning prayer. And all of those little ritualistic kinds of habits help you with your prayer life. So if you want to have a set prayer life, then I would say decide what time you're going to get up in the morning. Engage with that heroic minute when you get up, come down, and first thing you do is pray. Then you've got the rest of your day to do whatever you need to do. So those are my thoughts on that, and I hope somebody finds this useful. Anything else?
I would just say that I echo your sentiments about going to bed at a certain time and waking up at a certain time. The reason that I'm able to keep that plan of life on the regular is when I'm adhering to that schedule of going to sleep at a proper time and waking up. It requires that I wake up at 5 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there are times when I can't do that for whatever reason, if I have to work late or whatever, and then I've got to either suck it up and sleep less, which is not good, or I rush through stuff and have to modify the schedule with the use of technology. But I think that's a good piece of advice.
Yep.
All right. So as we get ready to close out, one of the things that we were going to do tonight, we just don't have time to do it. I wanted to review all sorts of different ways that we could do this. And as being kind of the journal guy, I ordered the Saint Maker journal to do a review on. We haven't had time to really look at it. I think next week we'll spend a little bit of time dissecting the use of that. There are a lot of people in the Catholic blogosphere and podcast world that are really praising it as a tool. And so this will give us a little bit of time to take a look at it. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about it. But if it's a useful tool, we'll recommend it. And if it's not, we'll talk about our concerns about it as a tool as well. So I hope you've gotten something out of tonight that at the very least, I think the thing that you should leave with is there's not one way to have a daily prayer plan. You've got to make it your own. But what's important is you find that particular place and you find that particular time and you dedicate yourself to doing it daily and then add to it as you solidify the practices that you have. But, you know, you have to be intentional about it. And if you're not, it just won't happen. But here's what I will promise. You will grow so much and you will see so many fruits bear out of it. And in those times where you're struggling, you'll really be able to hear the Lord speak to you. And I can't, this is me, you know, I'm the journal guy, but I can't recommend journaling enough because it gives you a written documentation of what your prayer life has been. It gives you an opportunity to see in writing what you were feeling in your conversations with the Lord. But also, if you're doing it properly and you're listening and you're writing what he speaks to your heart, then you're also going to be able to see in concrete form what God is speaking to you. So that's my last piece of advice. Thank you for joining us, and smoke them if you got them.
So apologies for the interruption.
No need for apologies, sir. Don't insult us with that. Don't insult us with your apologies.
I was apologizing to the listeners.
They're not ever going to hear this.
Okay. Not even any of it?
No.
Good.